V'haya eikev tishmeun, eis hamishpatim ha'ele ushmartem va'asisem osam, v'shamar Adonai Elohecha lecha, es habris v'es hachesed asher nishba la'avosecha. This shall be the reward when you hearken to these ordinances, and you observe and perform them. Hashem your God will safeguard for you the covenant and the kindness that he swore to your forefathers.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
As far as the opening music goes, behead the first word, drop the second word, and keep the third word. Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Ekev. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 18th day of Menachem Av, 5773, corresponding to July 25th. July is on its way out. Menachem Av has a little bit more time to go, but it's in its second half already, with the 9 days behind us, Tisha B'Av behind us, Shabbat Nachamu behind us, Tu B'Av behind us, and now we have the balance of Av, which is the lead-in to the month of Elul. Some actually say the word Av can be considered the initials of Elul Ba. Our mindset is already focusing on Elul and the high holidays. But we still have a nice chunk of Menachem Av to go, and we have a beautiful Sedra this week of Ekev, and we will do a whole bunch of those things after Tehillim Kuflamed Psalm 130. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shimava koli tihyena aznecha kashuvot lakol tachanunai. Imavonot tishmor yah Adonai miya amod ki imacha hasalicha lama'an tivare. Kivi ti Adonai kivata nafshi velidvaro hochalti. Nafshi ladonai, mi shomerim la boker, shomerim la boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael, mi kol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanatunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. I have a surprise guest here. Just walked in to my office to take care of some things for this Shabbat. This Shabbat we're having a Shabbaton. It's a combination of our regular kind of Shabbaton together with a group from Baltimore who will be joining us. So we have an augmented team of scholars and residents. I am referring to Rabbi Neil Winkler, the Rav of the Young Israel of Fort Lee, New Jersey, and a longtime friend of mine, and most importantly, a San Francisco Giant baseball fan, but maybe I'll say more about that in a moment, plus Rabbi Shmuel Silber from the Suburban Orthodox Shul in Baltimore, plus Rabbi Chanoch Yeras from the Beit Yisrael Shul in Yamin Moshe here in Yerushalayim. So it looks to be a very exciting Shabbos, and Rabbi Winkler brought in his Mara Mekomot, and we spent some time working on that. And then I said to him, how about a Dvar Torah on Parshat Ekev? No preparation. What's the first thing that comes to your mind? And he did not let me down, as you will hear now.
You know, Phil, at the very beginning of the sixth aliyah of this Pasha of Akev, I believe it's the 10th pasuk of the 11th perek, where Moshe Rabbeinu tells Bnei Yisrael as they are approaching Eretz Yisrael, they're on Arvot Moav, he says that the land of Israel, Lo Eretz Mitzrayim hi, can't be compared to Egypt. And Rashi immediately comments, Ela Tova Himena. It's far better than Eretz Mitzrayim, and he goes in his approach to explain why living in Israel would be easier. The waters come by themselves, you don't have to irrigate, so on and so forth. But interestingly enough, the Ibn Ezra, and I believe the Da'at Zakenim as well, both point to the exact opposite. Not that Chas V'Shalom, Eretz Yisrael, is worse than Eretz Mitzrayim, but rather they say that in Eretz Mitzrayim, your behavior didn't matter. No matter what happened, that Nile was going to overflow, and it was going to irrigate the low-lying fields. You had irrigated fields even when there was no rain in Egypt proper. The fact is, it's desert primarily. 98% of Egypt is desert. But the low-lying, the delta near the Nile River, they received the irrigation from the overflowing inundation of the Nile. That's not true with Eretz Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu is telling Bnei Yisrael. Lo ha'eretz Mitzrayim hi asher yeshavtem ba. Because there, v'yishkit devarag lecha kegan hayarak, you can irrigate it with your foot. I believe it's a Da'at Zakenim who says they would build little small dams in the irrigation ditches, and as soon as the Nile overflowed, they'd kick over the small dams, and the fields would be inundated, and they'd get wonderfully irrigated. Not so Eretz Yisrael. There, limtar hashamayim tishtemayim. There you're going to depend upon rain, and rain depends directly upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, upon God. And therefore, whereas in Egypt, your behavior didn't impact whether or not you're going to have an irrigated field or not, in Eretz Yisrael is a different pattern. It's a different law. God's not only looking over it, but providing for it, and dependent upon your behavior. That will be a direct have a direct impact upon the irrigation. And that's why immediately after that, it flows into the second Parsha of the Shema. Vaya, therefore he says, Im shamoa tishmu el mitzvot ayasher nochi mitzvah etchem hayom. If you listen to the mitzvot, then you'll have no problem. V'natati mitar atzachem bi'ito yore u'malkosh. I'll give you the reins. But God forbid, chas v'shalom, if you do not, then va'atzar hashamayim v'lo yihya matar. God will hold back the reins. And because, as opposed to Egypt, you're going to be dependent upon rain, then Eretz Yisrael is, I think, as you would put it, Phil, a very God-sensitive area, a mitzvah-sensitive land. You can't get away with the behavior that the Egyptians got away with in Egypt, because you're going to be in a holy land, and your mitzvah participation and your mitzvah observance is what's going to directly impact your economic future. Halavai, we'll always keep that in mind. And Mirza Hashem, we will continue having a bright economic future, following Hashem's mitzvot and doing as he wants us to do in this holy land.
Thank you, Rabbi Neil Winkler of the Young Israel of Fort Lee, New Jersey. And have a good Shabbos with us and a good time in the rest of your visit to Eretz Yisrael, to Israel. I would like, with your permission, to add the following point to yours, and that is that if God had chosen, he could have made the Egyptian people accountable for their deeds in a similar way by determining whether the Nile would overflow and irrigate fields or not, depending about how they behaved. But there was a conscious decision, kivyochol, so to speak, on God's part to say, when it comes to other nations of the world, the natural forces, the geography and the, meteorological makeup of areas and topology and everything else that goes into it, topography maybe, determine what happens in Eretz Yisrael. God's attitude is when Bnei Yisrael, the people of Israel, are in Eretz Yisrael and they are faithful to God and they keep Torah and mitzvot, then things will be good. But his eye is upon us, which means when we let him down, it will show in these natural ways by, as Rabbi Winkler mentioned, the heavens closing up and the yield not being good. Chas v'sholom, God forbid. So we have a certain accountability. The ultimate accountability is to the point where the land spits us out, as it has done in the past. Apologies for the ringing of the phone. We also have God's assurance, so to speak, that when we are not in the land will not be hospitable to whatever inhabitants come in and take over. And that has shown itself through history in a beautiful way. This land had been described as desolate by different famous people over the centuries. And you look at it now, and it is an agricultural wonder of how flourishing this land is. So we are coming back, and we are here, and more of us are coming back, and that's what it's all about. So that's the meaning of the pasuk that Rabbi Winkler spoke about, and we're ready now to move on to another subtopic. I would like to get personal, as I often do on the show, and bring you back with me about 44 years. Actually, not about 44 years. On the Hebrew calendar, it would have been last Shabbat in the afternoon of Shabbat Nachamu. On the secular calendar, I checked, and it was the 26th of July, which is tomorrow. So we're talking 44 years ago, the summer of 1969. The two things that stick in my mind from that summer. One is the beginning of my beard, which of course is not really significant except to me. And that is over the course of the 3 weeks until after Tisha B'Av that summer, my beard grew in a little. And since then, I have not shaved it completely. I trim it, but I have not shaved my chin or my sideburns all the way down to the chin, my mustache, in 44 years. So store that piece of unwanted trivia, and now let me get to the important story. I was a madrich for a group called Machon Kayetz Dati, one of the Jewish agency's many, many summer groups that come with teenagers. This one happened to have been for Mizrahi Hatzair, which doesn't exist anymore. But I was one of the madrichim that summer of 69 for the high school part. There was a collegiate group and a high school group of Machon Kayetz Dati for Mizrahi Hatzair. The scene takes place in the afternoon of Shabbat Nachamu, finished with Mincha, where we had just read the beginning of this week's Sedra, Parshat Ekev, and on our way into Seudah Shlishit. One of the boys to whom I had assigned the duty of giving a Devar Torah at Seudah Shlishit came to me and he said he forgot, he didn't prepare anything, and he's not speaking. In those situations, it fell to me to pinch hit, and the text that was freshest in my mind was the Torah reading of the beginning of Parshat Ekev from Mincha, which we had just finished. So I open up to the Torah reading at the beginning of Ekev, and a pasuk jumps out of the page and smacks me on my forehead between my eyes. I've told this story before. If you've heard it, I apologize for repeating it. But it's an important story for me. And hopefully, each of you listening either have that story in your own form or will have that story. The pasuk that jumped out for me was the first pasuk in Perek Chet. Kol ha-mitzvah asher anochi mitzavecha hayom Tishmerun La'asot, the entire commandment, this is the way the Stone Chumash translates it, the entire commandment, I would say the entire body of mitzvot, that I command you today, you shall observe to perform. The pasuk continues, Lama'an tichyun urvitem, so that you may live and increase or flourish. Uvatem virishtem et ha'aretz, and come and possess the land that Hashem swore to your forefathers. Virishtem et ha'aretz asher nishba Hashem la'avotechem. I subsequently noticed many psukim in Vo'et Chanan, the previous week's leaning, a pasuk or two or more in Devarim, others coming up in Re'eh, others in different places, and I started seeing it all over the place, where God states clearly the reason for Torah and mitzvot, which means the reason for the Jewish people, the reason for Judaism, was to take them, out of Egypt, to bring us to Eretz Yisrael, and on the way to give us the Torah to live by in the land where God wanted us to live. That's it. I've said this many, many times in all different kind of ways. This is the pasuk that said it to me 44 years ago. That afternoon, I don't remember how the Dvar Torah went at Shalosh Shuras, but I do remember that that was the moment that I made my firm personal decision to have my future in the land of Israel. It took me 12 years to come on Aliyah from that point, but that's almost irrelevant because everybody has his own calculations and his own situations, but you need that point in time, that experience, call it whatever you want, of a pasuk in the Torah or something else speaking so strongly to you so that you could come to that same kind of conclusion. I grew up in a religious Zionist home. We didn't call it that in those days. It was Hapoel Mizrahi, Mizrahi Hapoel Mizrahi. But today we would identify it as religious Zionist. I was nurtured by Bnei Akiva for many years, and then I was part of the nurturing system as a Madrich and a Marake Sniff, and Israel was always there. But I still look back to summer of 69, to the afternoon of Shabbat Nachamu, for the instant that I made that firm commitment, and thank God I was able to carry it out, and thank God I am here almost 32 years still, and with children and grandchildren, Kain Yirbu. And at that time, I was a recent graduate of Yeshiva College, and just starting on, I guess, real adulthood. So that's my story, and that's my Akev story. This first portion of Akev sends chills up and down my spine, and not just for that pasuk. There are other amazing psukim that if you read them, if you listen to them, if you take them to heart, then you also can start your planning or continue your planning or concretize your planning to live a life of Torah in Eretz Yisrael. If I might, I'd like to read a couple of psukim and then lead into the next topic. This is Moshe Rabbeinu talking to the people. He has just explained an important dynamic of the wandering period in the Midbar and the purpose of the Mun and the purpose of other miracles that happened. But Vishamarta et mitzvot Hashem Elokecha lo lechet bidrachav uliyira oto, it all comes down to following God and keeping his Torah and mitzvot. Why? Ki Hashem Elokecha miviacha el eretz tova, eretz nachalei mayim, ayanos usahomos yotzeim babika uvahor. Translation: For Hashem your God is bringing you to a good land, a land with streams of water, of springs and underground water, coming forth in valley and mountain. The Torah continues, Eretz chita usa'ora v'gefen usa'ena v'rimon, Eretz zeis shemen u'devash, a land of wheat, barley, grapes, figs, and pomegranates, a land of oil, olives, and date honey. Eretz asher lo v'miskenus tochal ba lechem lo sechsar kol ba. Eretz asher avoneha varzel umehara tachzov nechoshet. A land where you will eat bread without poverty. You will lack nothing there. A land whose stones are iron and from whose mountains you will mine copper. And the final pasuk in that portion, V'yochalta v'savata uveirachta es Hashem Elokecha al ha'aretz hatova asher natan lach. You will eat and you will be satisfied and bless Hashem your God for the good land that he gave you. That last verse that I read is the mitzvah of Birkat HaMazon. In English, grace after meals, the bracha we say, brachot we say, after we eat a meal. There's a lot to talk about it, which we will in the second half of this week's Torah Tidbits audio. In the meantime, hold those thoughts, and we'll be right back with more TTA, as we fondly call it, for Parshat Akev. You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Akev. Let us continue. But first, a musical interlude. This is a track called Kel Adon. The words come from the Shabbat morning davening. The artists are Chilik Frank and Naor Carmi. Kel Adon. God loy vetu voy mole yoinom Tassus funo soy bevi moi doi Amis goe al chayoy sakoydesh Venedo bechovoy dala melkovo Zchus umi sholif nechisoy Chesed verachamim mole chevoy doi Toi vi meoy Thank you. Okay, let's get back to Birkat HaMazon, the after bracha for a meal, and see if we can put some flesh on the bones. And this is an example of a mitzvah in the Torah where the wording is on the cryptic side, open to misleading and misunderstandings, and the body of halacha fleshes things out. We have the words in the pasuk, V'achalta v'savata, you shall eat and be satisfied, or when you eat and will be satisfied. U'veirachta t'Hashem Elokecha, you shall bless God. Now, the blessing is pointed in the direction of blessing him for the land which he has given us. But we know that blessing after food is general for feeding us as well. So let's take a look at what happens. There's a whole building that's constructed here. Our understanding is that according to the Torah, the only required blessing that we have is after a full satisfying meal, we have what's known as Birkat HaMazon. That is a d'oraita, a Torah requirement, and all the other brachot, the after brachot when we're less than satisfied, the before brachot for food, the before brachot for mitzvot, the before brachot for anything that we have, the blessings, the entire range with the possible further exception of Birkat HaTorah, the blessings for Torah learning, which we say every morning, which some people say is also D'oraita, but Birkat HaMazon is where it starts. There's a very nice little piece of Gemara in Masechet Brachot, which has a conversation between the heavenly angels and God. The angels came to God and said, in your Torah, it describes you as being impartial, not favoring one party over another, and not accepting bribes. So how is it that in your Torah it also says, in Birchat Kohanim, the blessing that the Kohanim give the people, but it comes from God, Yisa Hashem Panav Elecha Vichuneka, that God shall show favor to you. God's answer is, and I shouldn't favor the Jewish people. Look at what they do. I told them that when they're satisfied after a full meal, they should bless me. And they bless me even on a kazayit or a kibetza, and I'll add to that even on a sip of water. You take a sip of water and you precede it by the blessing Shehakol Niyah Bidvaro, where God said, you will eat and be satisfied, and then you will bless. So God's answer to the angels was, why shouldn't I favor them if they go out of their way to add situations in which they make a blessing to me? This reminds me of something. This is sort of a side point, and I've mentioned this once in a while. I have someplace a blow-up photocopy of a piece from Reader's Digest of many years ago on the feature called Life in These United States. A woman is writing that she and her husband have just started sending their young daughter to Sunday school at their church. And the topic that she had learned was grace, saying grace. But she took it a little too far. When my husband, whatever his name is, went to the refrigerator and took out a bottle of beer, our daughter said to him, Daddy, are you going to say grace on the beer? For that story, this woman, a Catholic, received, at the time, probably $250. Now, then it went up to $300 and $350. Who knows what they're paying for it now? And it was a funny, amusing anecdote of life in these United States. When I read it and reread it, I realized something. For the Jewish people, it is not at all a funny story. Because we say grace, or better, we make a bracha 4 full satisfying meals before and after, and we wash our hands ritually before eating bread, and we make a bracha on the washing of our hands and on the bread, and, as I mentioned, on a sip of water and every single thing in between. We make a bracha. That's what we do. So, of course, when you take a can of beer, a bottle of beer, you make a bracha, shekol ni'abit varo, before you drink it. But that's not something amusing to write into Reader's Digest. That's what we do. And this is an important concept. I always try to tell people that brachot are miniature tefillot, miniature prayers, where in 9 words or so, some of them are a little shorter, some a little longer, 9 words. Let's take that sip of water and extend it to anything that we say a shahakol ni'abit varo for, which could mean a piece of meat, a chicken or fish or an egg or a dairy product and a whole bunch of other things, including drinks and water, where we say, now focus on this for a moment. You're thirsty, you're walking down a corridor in an office building, and you see a water fountain. You stop. You bend down, you turn on the spigot, and before you take your simple little sip of water, you say the following: God is the source of all blessing, and we bless him. You, God, our God, King of the universe, where everything that exists, exists because you said so. That is an amazing theological statement, which consists of belief in God, belief that he is ours, belief that he is the King of the universe, belief that he's the source of all blessing, and that he, by his divine verbal command, however that works, brought every single thing in this world into existence. It's like taking the Bible and reciting the first verse or two of Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et haaretz every single time you take a sip of water, a potato chip, or anything. It is an amazing, amazing thing. Going back to that Gemara in Brachot, God says, what, I shouldn't favor the people who do these things? This is how we should keep that in mind. Now, I want to go back to specifically Birkat HaMazon. If you eat and you are less than satisfied, our sages required us to say Birkat HaMazon nonetheless. Example, you're on your way home from someplace, and supper is going to be in another hour or so, and you're not very hungry, but just a little bit, and you pass by a falafel store. So you decide to go in, and you don't want to spoil your supper. You ask for a half of a falafel. Here's a half pita filled with the falafel ingredients, and you put on your own stuff. And there is a washing sink and a cup, and you wash netilat yadayim, and you make hamotzi, and you have your snack of half of a falafel. Hardly did anything to curb your appetite for dinner, which is a good thing. And that meal, it's a meal because you broke bread, so to speak, and you washed for hamotzi, and you made hamotzi, and you ate. That requires Birkat HaMazon after it, but by rabbinic law. Torah law, v'yochalta v'savata, you eat and are satisfied. And here, even if you walk away hungry, you still have to say a bracha. So that's where it starts. Now, what about not eating bread? What about eating cookies, cake, pretzels, pasta? Well, there is an opinion in the Mishnah that we should also say Birkat HaMazon for eating something like I just mentioned, and certainly if it's a meal that consists of a grain-based, flour-based food, we should say full Birkat HaMazon. We do not follow that opinion. We follow the majority of the majority opinion that says that there is an abridged version of the threefold blessing, which is what Birkat HaMazon is called. Birkat HaMazon has three blessings and then an added fourth blessing and then an added other statements which are bracha-like. But the essence of Birkat HaMazon is still referred to as the three bracha. And there's an abridged version which is called Bracha Achat Me'ein Shalosh, a single bracha with the themes of the three. And that is known as Bracha Acharona. It is known as Al HaMichya or Al HaGefen or Al HaPeirot, as the case may be, depending on what we ate. So, other foods. Now, go back to the opinion in the Mishnah, which we don't follow. And there is a logic to it. But let's take one more step. On dates, figs, pomegranates, olives. What did I leave out? Figs. After eating those, we also say the abridged version, Bracha Me'ein Shalosh, Al HaPeirot, or Al Peiroteha. There is an opinion in the Mishnah that we should say a full Birkat HaMazon on that as well, because the verse, two verses before the benching verse, is Eretz Chita Usora, a land of wheat and barley and all products that come from the grains. Gefen, V'gefen Uteina V'rimon, and grapes and figs and pomegranates. Eretz Zeit Shemen Udavash, and the land is a land of olives that give oil and honey, which comes from dates. So the opinion is, Rabban Gamliel's, that we should say a full Birkat HaMazon on any of the Shivat HaMinim, the seven species that are described in the description of Eretz Yisrael. We don't follow that. We break it down to a meal with bread, even if it's not satisfying, not filling. We still say full Birkat HaMazon. And on the foods that come from the seven species mentioned in that verse, we say the abridged version, Me'ein Shalosh. And when it's not from those foods, we say an even shorter blessing, which we know as Borei Nefashot. Don't want to go into every little detail here. We won't have enough time for that. Rabbi Akiva's opinion in the Mishnah is that the pasuk, the verse of V'yachalta V'savata Uveirachta at Hashem Elokecha, stands on its own. It is not connected to the previous verse, which speaks about eating bread, Eretz Asher Lo V'miskenut Tochal Bolechem. It's not related to the one before that, that speaks of the seven species. It means if you eat whatever you eat, if you eat pickles, and you're satisfied with that, and that's your meal, or you eat anything, tuna fish, out of the can, even though it gets only a shahakol niya bidvaro before, it is a blessing. It is a food that you are satisfied by, and you should acknowledge that with the full Birkat HaMazon. Now, we don't follow Rabbi Akiva's opinion either, but it does show us the flexibility of the original rule, which has become much more concrete in Jewish law, and we have guidelines that have to be followed. So the question is, person, this is a practical question, a person has dinner one evening, and he's not interested in breaking bread, and he doesn't want to have a light supper, and he has tuna fish and a salad and a drink and pieces of chocolate for dessert, or let's say a fruit for dessert, and not one of the seven species. He has a peach and a nectarine for dessert. And he's got a full, satisfying meal. The halacha that we follow says he only says a bori nefashot, the very short after bracha, on that kind of food. Meal, yes, he looks at it as a meal, but it's halachically not a meal. Although Rabbi Akiva's opinion in the Mishnah is it would be a meal. But we don't follow that opinion, and we are not at liberty to pick and choose different opinions in the Mishnah that are recorded and say, I like that better, that appeals to me better, and then go do it. Can't do that. So what are they doing there? That's a separate question, which is an interesting question. But they're doing it, they're recorded there to teach us how different people interpreted the sequence of verses that I read to you before, and whether you include verses 9 and 10 together, which talks about bread, which is what we do, or you include 8, 9, and 10 together, which would include the other species of the seven, or you just look at verse 10, and you have a different definition for being satisfied. So what you've heard here, and I hope I haven't confused you, is a combination of the development of halacha as seen from a perspective of that which came before the halacha was fixed, to a machloket, a dispute in the Mishnah, a three-way machloket in this case, but that's what the Talmud is there for, to tell us who we follow. And the subsequent codes are also there. Doesn't come out that simple, but it gives you a pretty decent idea. I also want to spell out something which should not go without saying and is not to be taken for granted. I hope that you extracted from this last piece of time both concepts that stand behind mitzvot and Jewish law, as well as a little glance at some of the nitty-gritty details. This goes back to what I say a lot about can't see the forest from the trees, or can't see the trees from the forest. I never knew which way the expression goes, but it's important to go both ways. A person needs to see the forest and admire that which puts the whole thing into a perspective, and needs to come closer and inspect the individual trees, which, in my analogy, correspond to the halachic detail. Not to get lost in the detail, but not to suffice with the concepts either. Judaism exists on both levels of broad, sometimes very inspiring concepts, and little nitty-gritty picky details, and we need them both. There is a lot more in Parshat Ekev, and if you think that's bad, Re'eh coming up in Shoftim and Ki Tetzeh are worse. Not enough time to do it, but let's suffice it at what we did manage to explore. And let me wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.